Amy Bruni with us, Life with the Afterlife. That's her book. We'll tell you how you can get that in just a moment. But let's take your calls, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Amy Bruni with us, her book, Life with the Afterlife. Where do you get the book, Amy?
Anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, you name it.
Good for you. What advice would you give to people who want to get into ghost investigating, ghost hunting?
I honestly find like-minded folks locally. They're now with honestly, the internet makes it so much easier. You know, when I first started investigating, there weren't, you know, Facebook didn't exist. And you know, that's really it. Find people who want to do the same thing and just get out there. You know, thankfully, there are so many investigation groups and tour companies like mine, Strange Escapes, that can get you around others who are similarly interested and just hit the ground running.
Absolutely. Now, and can they get into it without a lot of money?
I think so. I mean, honestly, you can start with your phone. I always tell people your phone has voice memo capability. Use that as your digital voice recorder. You know, record your surroundings with the camera on your phone. Start there. And then, you know, the most you're going to spend is probably traveling. If you want to go see some of these more haunted sites and things, Getting there is going to be the expensive part, but it's so much fun and it's so worth it. And I find it to be incredibly rewarding.
Where have you not gone that you'd like to go to investigate?
Oh my gosh. This is one of my favorite questions. So there's two on my list. Graceland. I really want to investigate Graceland because I've heard some crazy stories about the second floor, and the White House. The White House is famously haunted. You know, I know that probably the most famous ghost there is the ghost of Abraham Lincoln, supposedly. And as I'm sure many of your listeners know, Mary Todd Lincoln was a huge spiritualist and held seances in the White House. And I would just love to get in there. So maybe one day.
At Gettysburg, have you been there?
Many times. I love investigating Gettysburg. I've investigated the battlefield. I've investigated the Farnsworth House, the orphanage, the Jenny Wade House, Cashtown Inn. Like, I've been all over that place. And it's one of my favorite places to investigate. Funnily enough, when we investigated there for kindred spirits at the Farnsworth House, we found a ghost there that had nothing to do with the Civil War battle, which is kind of funny because you think, you know, there's a lot more history to Gettysburg than just that one battle. So it was funny to find a spirit there that had nothing to do with it.
When you're there, Amy, and you spend the night, do you kind of go to sleep with one eye open?
In Gettysburg, no. I feel oddly at peace in Gettysburg, which seems strange. I think it's just the community they've built up there kind of surrounding what happened. And it's very patriotic, which I like. And there's just something strangely comforting about it. I think it's the history and everything, but no, I'm not worried about the Gettysburg ghosts there. I think that the Battle of Gettysburg left an imprint on that place. And I think you can't have something that traumatic happen without leaving some sort of trace behind, some sort of energy. And I think that's why people see so many spirits there. I think that trauma is just kind of imprinted on that land and that it replays over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take some calls here for you, Amy, for this hour. We'll go to John in Los Angeles to get things started. Hey, John, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was about children like me that got exposed to the paranormal at a young age. I was first, like, in 1959-60, I was 5-6 years old.
Wow.
And I found that two of the places, and I've been open to it my whole life, but I found two of the places I lived in that were traumatic events, like a suicide or a suicide. One had a double murder-suicide, and we usually didn't find out until after we were there for a while. But I was going to ask her how she dealt with kids that have been with that, or has she seen much of that, or is it rare? Yeah, because I've been open to it ever since. I can walk into a building and tell immediately if there's something else going on.
You can feel it.
On the back of the neck stands up.
What's the exposure and experience, Amy, with children, including yourself?
Funny. Yeah, you know, John, I feel like you sound just like me. You know, I had experiences as a child, which is really what opened my interest to it. And, you know, the first experience I had was I saw this full-bodied apparition standing outside my kitchen window. I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and there was no way that someone could have been standing there. It was on the second floor. You know, I saw this man, and my first instinct, because I was a child, I wasn't programmed yet to be afraid of it. My first instinct was stranger danger. I was like, oh, that's someone that's not supposed to be here. How is he standing there? I'm going to go find my mom. You know, it was this kind of, but it wasn't terror like I think you would feel as an adult. And so I think being exposed to it as a child raises the curiosity level. And I do work with a lot of families who have children who have seen ghosts and spirits. And I always tell them that it's the reaction you give it that will affect the child. So if you act scared, then they're going to be scared. Whereas if you, and like my parents treated it as, it was very normal. Oh, we have a spirit. We have a ghost. How interesting. And I went, oh, that is interesting, rather than being scared. And so I'm assuming your parents probably did kind of the same thing, where they're going to mirror what you do. And so I always tell people too, when kids have paranormal experiences, if they're not traumatized, if they're not completely scared, don't make a big deal out of it, because you know, spirits and ghosts are something that they can really get into later on in life, for sure. But it does open a lot of really heavy questions about mortality and life and what happens and that we die at all. Things that can be really hard for kids to digest. So I always say, just kind of make it fun, make it interesting. Use it as a history lesson and a talking point, but just don't act scared.
Do other cultures deal with these ghostly apparitions the same way we do here in the States?
Oh, no. I think that it depends on where you are, but some of them, treat their ghosts with absolute reverence. Some of them, some other cultures are terrified of ghosts, like you're not even really supposed to speak about them. So it's interesting to see how they've kind of evolved here in the United States. But I think that we handle our ghosts very similarly to, like European countries and stuff. Like they very much like to coexist with their ghosts. They expect there to be a ghost in their homes, especially if their homes are older.
Let's go to Debbie in Nevada City, California. Hi, Deb. Go ahead. Debbie?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, well, she just answered it on the radio as I was hearing it, that your first full-body apparition you saw was at age 7?
Yes. So I, as I was saying, he was standing outside. I grew up in a house in Alameda, California. Well, I spent many years there as a child, I should say. And this man was standing outside the window wearing green. I do remember there being green. And so later we found out that the original owners of the home had a son who had passed away in World War II. And then we also found out that where I saw this apparition standing outside the window, at one point there was a wraparound porch there. There could have been someone standing there. So he was kind of imprinted in a space. And so that was what really piqued my interest as a child. I was like, oh, wait a minute. And it got me researching. So that's when I started going to the library and devouring every book I could find on ghosts and spirits.
Any follow-up there, Deb?
I saw my first apparition when I was 5 years old. I was living at the time in a historic Connecticut house. It was a farm, and I saw a farmer with the straw hat, overalls, and everything else. And I was very grateful that my parents didn't poo-poo it.
Right. They could have.
My parents were, they were child of the 60s, they were from the 60s. And so they said, well, let's go research this. And they went to the library, and sure is enough, they found out that that was all farmland at the time, and that where our house stood, the farmer had passed away in the house. And so that's what we were seeing. So I guess my other question to you is, are you a sensitive?
So I am not. I think, though, that after years of doing this, that I can definitely sense if a space is haunted. Like, it feels different to me. The air feels heavy. I just get a feeling. I've been in enough haunted spaces now to know that that there's a ghost there if I walk in. So I think that's as far as my sensitivity goes. Now, my friend Chip Coffee, who George and I were talking about earlier, he insists that I am psychic, but I don't know that I am, and I don't know that I'm ready to kind of go down that path. But I don't, you know, I don't close myself off to it for sure. I should also add, Debbie, I love that your parents used it as a teachable moment, because that's what my dad did.
That helps.
You know, it absolutely does. And he used it as an excuse to teach me history. Once he knew I was interested in ghosts, he started taking me to all these historic locations under the guise of them being haunted. But at the same time, I was learning. And, you know, I tell a lot of historical locations and stuff that to open up their ghost tours, that you're going to get kids in the door. They love the idea of ghosts, but while they're there, they're going to learn. I love when parents do that.
And, you know, most children, for some reason, seem to be very cognizant and sensitive about other little ghostly apparitions that they kept as friends when they were little. And, you know, most parents would think they were the imaginary friends. I think there was something to that.
I think so, too. I grew up with an imaginary friend, a very distinct imaginary friend. And now I often wonder, was that actually an imaginary friend, or was that a spirit in the apartment complex we lived in when I was that little? You know, I was an only child for the first 5 years of my life, so maybe I created this other kid, but I'm not so sure now.
I remember getting a call once from a parent years ago who was talking about their little girl who would tell them that she had this friend that they thought was imaginary. And the little girl would talk about this friend quite often until one day they really got concerned because their daughter talked about the friend telling her that she was killed in the house. And they're hearing this from a little 5-6-year-old girl, and they're freaking out. And all of a sudden she said, "Yeah, Mama, and she was killed in the house, and they buried her right here." And she's like pointing to a floor in the kitchen or something like that. And the parents really started freaking out, and they ended up calling the police for some reason. They dug up the floorboards and found the skeleton of a little girl.
Yeah, that's
creepy.
Scary. That's so creepy. And, you know, good for them for taking action on it, at least, you know, and hopefully it got some answers, because somebody out there was probably missing that little girl.
And, of course, ghosts have had some pretty benevolent situations as well. They try to help people, don't they?
I think so. You know, and I think that the people who we love most, who we have lost, I don't necessarily think that they always haunt us per se, but I think sometimes they come back in our times of need. You know, there you might feel someone there because you need to feel them in that moment. I think that's when spirits are the most helpful, is when we're in, you know, some of our more dark moments. I do think that spirits have the ability to kind of come back and just give you a little bit of comfort. So, and then obviously you have spirits like that little girl who kind of, you know, helped herself, really trying to get some sort of answer. And thankfully that family called the police.
Absolutely. Let's go now to our first-time caller, Genoa in Seville, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, Genoa.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. I have a question that has to do with reoccurring dreams. I have a reoccurring dream at least every 6 months, and it's very vivid. And at the end of the dream, I think about my mom, which has been deceased since I was 5. And the dream is also like the place looks so familiar. So I believe in reincarnation too. So I want to know if it goes hand in hand or if it could be connected in some way.
I mean, I think so. Dreams to me. So I feel as though my mom passed away a couple years ago, and my grandfather passed away a few years ago as well. And I feel as though they have visited me in dreams more than I feel like they have visited me, you know, in a ghostly sense. And so I pay a lot of attention to dreams. So, yeah, I think there could be something to it. But I also think dreams, there's a lot to the idea that dreams are some sort of psychological phenomenon. Like there is something your subconscious could be trying to tell you as well. And hopefully at some point that dream will make sense to you. But in the meantime, those are the kind of things where you got to just write every little detail down and really think about it. Like, what is this trying to tell me? Is this coming from me or is this coming from somewhere else?
Well, what's your gut tell you, Amy? Where's it coming?
Oh, from this one? I mean, I think whatever has happened, if it's a recurring dream like that, it could be either or, but regardless of where it's coming from, whether it's coming from a spirit or whether it's coming from your subconscious, when you have a recurring dream like that, there is something in your life that needs attention.
Yes.
And so that, I think, it is something to pay attention to. Sometimes the only person who can help you is yourself. And it's so they're like puzzle pieces. One day it suddenly makes sense. And so I would encourage you definitely to write down every detail of that dream every time you have it. Notice what changes. You know, notice what doesn't. Pick up some like dream dictionaries and journals and see if there's any part of that could, you know, symbolize something going on in your life that needs attention.
Absolutely. Nick, let's go to Andrew in Maryland. Welcome to the program. Hi, Andrew, east of the Rockies.
Hi, it's good to speak to you tonight. I have a question or two here. The first one is I don't count them, maybe 5, 6 of them running around my house at night. And I've learned a long time ago that you can't fight them by yourself. And so I've used my own timetable here to tell them to go away, far away from me.
And do they?
They run.
They listen to you.
Yes, because see, I don't have to worry about my flesh and blood because that's not important.
Let me ask you this, Amy. Most ghosts, are they that attentive? I mean, do they listen to you like that?
It depends on what they want. Usually if a spirit or a ghost is lingering, in my experience, there's a reason. Unless it's something that's more residual type, like, you know, just the recording playing over and over again, or something more benign, just kind of a piece of energy still there. But if you have an intelligent type haunting that is interacting with you over and over again, they will listen, of course, and they can listen, but it's just like a person in front of you. You know, it depends on whether or not they choose to listen to you in that moment. So I think that's great that they're cooperating with him and respecting his space. But I would wonder, you know, why are they here? What do they want? Is there something I can be assisting them with?
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Doom, Ed Dames, joins us for a couple hours talking about remote viewing, COVID-19. And then Andrew Collins joins us to talk about some ancient civilizations, only the way Andrew Collins can. And welcome back to Coast, Amy Bruni with us, of course. Her book is Life with the Afterlife, 13 Truths I Learned About Ghosts. And there probably could be more truths about that, Amy. What do you think?
I think so. You know, maybe there'll have to be a follow-up to this book.
So if you have gone all over the place, what do you think would happen if you spent the night in a cemetery?
Well, you know, people ask me all the time if cemeteries are haunted, and I do think there is something to the idea that a spirit might visit their own grave occasionally out of curiosity. You know, as a person, I feel like I might want to do that if I were a ghost. Would I want to just hang out by my grave all day and night? Probably not. So I don't think that cemeteries are haunted, very haunted, but I do see why spirits would be attracted to them. But I wouldn't mind sleeping in one. I find cemeteries to be very beautiful. I love the history in them, especially here in New England. There's cemeteries everywhere, so I'm in the right place.
Well, why do ghosts hang around? Do they not know they're dead?
Now, I think occasionally that is the case. We have encountered spirits that usually have died very suddenly and very traumatically and are very confused. I think that can be one of the reasons, but I think that those more insistent spirits, they have that classic unfinished business. There is some reason why they are lingering. There is someone they want to speak with. There is something that they lost. There's some sort of guilt that they're harboring. They don't feel like they deserve to move on. There's usually a reason. And that's why, you know, trying to find that reason out can be very labor intensive. It involves a lot of investigating over and over again and a lot of research. But, you know, I think that is ultimately what helps these spirits move on.
Wasn't that great movie with Bruce Willis called Sixth Sense, where he was a ghost but didn't realize it?
Yes. Spoiler alert. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
But yes, no, I think everyone has seen that movie by now. But I wonder, you know, that is that classic idea where he's going through the motions of his day still, very aware. I love that storyline because it makes me wonder if that is actually happening on some other plane where they're just kind of living and a bit confused. And then suddenly they have that moment where they realize, oh my goodness, you know, I'm dead. There was a spirit that we dealt with in Barnstable, Massachusetts, of this woman named Wilhelmina Crocker, who had been in a horrific train accident and passed away. And she kept running from the scene of the accident to the house next door to the house she grew up in looking for help. So her spirit would appear over and over again saying, help me, help me.
Oh, geez.
And it wasn't until we actually like showed her her death certificate and showed her the newspaper articles of what happened to her. And the last thing she said was, I'm going home. We got this EVP that said, I'm going home. And they haven't heard from her since.
Wow. To the phones we go. Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hi, our friend. How you feeling?
I feel great, George. And I tell you what, buddy, no kidding. I've got a profound question for you and Amy and comment. But quickly, I would say hello to all my buddies and girlfriends out there in coast-to-coast land. You make my whole life.
Well, that's great, and we're glad you're still ticking, my friend.
You know what? Tell it like it is, George. I mean, I am so glad to be alive, this wonderful wife and mine, and I having a ball, and I want to live to be 100 now.
Well, you better, because I'll still be on the air by then.
That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
My voice might change a little bit, but I'll still be on. It'll be something like, let's go to Barry now. And anyways, Barry, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, boy, you crack me up. But listen, George, if everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Well, that's basically true.
But, you know, it looks like if everybody knew how wonderful heaven was, they'd all run out and kill themselves.
Well, but then they wouldn't get there, would they?
Well, that's one of my questions. If you do commit suicide, which I have contemplated, do you get to go to heaven or do you go straight to hell?
Amy, that's a tough question. That's a religious question, isn't it?
It is a religious question. And, you know, I think that the first part of the question, I think that people can control this reality. You know, we all know what's happening here. I mean, I don't know nowadays with everything that's going on in the world, how in control we feel, but you know your reality here. And so it's comforting to think there is something better on the other side, but I think people hang on to the part that they can control for as long as possible, knowing and taking comfort that there could be something else. Now, as far as suicide goes, I will say I have met many a spirit that has killed themselves or taken their own life and regretted it. And that's why they are still here. They are regretful. They want their family to know that they are sorry, you know, that many times they didn't intend to go through with it. And so I don't necessarily think that they wouldn't move on to heaven if heaven exists, but I do know that I have met, you know, very regretful, sad spirits that are not happy with the outcome, that it did not solve what they thought it would solve.
Let's go to Nicole in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Nicole, thanks for calling.
George, I think you're the greatest, and I completely adore you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind.
No, I've been listening for so many years. Where do I start? So my mother and I, when I was a child, an infant, I had very extreme, I was haunted, more or less, as a child. I mean, and not only physically, but nightmares. Anyway, years and years go by. I'm 36 now. My mom is 56, and we're living together again for the first time. And since she's come into the house, I mean, spirits have always been present to me. And it's nothing that I see as abnormal, but now that my mom's here, it's like it's become more intense, and she's noticing it too. And I wonder if our energy together is making it more intense, or just the fact that someone here is noticing it. I mean, as just a quick example, I had an ex-fiance that committed suicide about 2 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
And my mom knew nothing of this. I mean, again, we haven't been in contact really. This whole COVID thing happened, and I just wanted her close. So I moved her in. And so I feel his presence regularly. And one night I'm sitting out on the porch and she walks out into the porch. And then I know he's there. I feel his presence. And she says to me, Josh is standing in the kitchen.
Wow.
Why is Josh standing in the kitchen? And I said, Mom, he's been gone for a while now. And I wonder if, I guess my question is, Amy, if us being together again is just her seeing the same thing as I do, or is exemplifying it and making it a stronger presence?
Are they feeding off each other, Amy, or is the mother picking up her own paranormal activity?
So it could be either or. Now, we absolutely influence our hauntings. You know, our energy feeds into a space, and spirits feel that and feed off of that a lot. You know, it's just like if someone walks into a room and there's a party going on and someone walks in and they're grumpy, everyone feels that downshift. Everyone goes, oh, you know, the energy changed in here. And that absolutely happens with spirits too. So it could be, I don't know what the dynamic between you and your mom is, if you're getting along together or if your energy together, there's something that you're creating that is kind of waking the spirits up a bit or making them more active. I'm hearing a lot too from people lately that just paranormal activity in general is picking up a lot during the pandemic. Like, and a lot of it is just the stress, I think, that we're putting out there. Everyone is stressed. Everyone's on edge, and spirits feel that. And people are obviously home a lot more too, so they're noticing their houses are haunted. But it could be that the energy, but it could also be that there's something that this spirit or these spirits are trying to tell you, and it might have something to do with your mom. You know, maybe there's something going on with your mom that she's not telling you. You know, it requires some investigation, but there is something about that dynamic with the two of you that is causing the activity to heighten.
Now, does her deceased fiancé communicate toward the mother, or is the mother the sensitive?
It could be both. There could be there could be something going on with this caller that the fiancé is trying to convey to the mother. You know, he could be trying to tell her something.
Why not go direct to her?
Maybe it's something that he wants someone else to know. You know, there's so many different, you know, there's so many different possibilities. This is the kind of thing that we come in and investigate. You know, we spend multiple nights trying to figure out, okay, what is this message? Why is he appearing to mom instead of her? You know, is there something that he wants mom to know is going on that she's not telling her? That kind of thing. You know, there's, it can get really, in depth and intense.
Let's go to Harry in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, Harry. Are you there?
How are you? Yes, sir. How are you?
There you go. Good, Harry. Thank you.
I've spoken to you before about astral body projection. I remember you said you did it when you were young.
Yes, sir. Yep.
I had also done it, too. And what I was wondering was, we were able to see our astral bodies. But what I was wondering was, can other people see our astral bodies? And if they can, would they think that they were ghosts?
Based on my experience, I don't think other people can see our astral bodies unless they are in the astral plane already. But if they're just, let's say, waking up and, you know, you're next to your partner and you look for their astral body, which is clearly floating above your physical body. That's how I think we get our energy when we sleep, by the way. I don't think they can see it. Amy, are you familiar with any of that?
I am. You know, I've had some really interesting claims where people have seen apparitions of people that are still very much alive, or they've seen apparitions of people appear that are alive, but they've seen the apparition of maybe that person as a child, you know, and so I don't know that that's astral projection. It could be, and we've wondered that sometimes, or if it's some bit of that person's energy that even though they're living, is still present in that space. If they spent enough time there, that their energy has kind of imprinted it. So I think both are things to explore. And like we were talking about earlier, about how sometimes you wake up and, you know, people see spirits, you know, in their room with them, and that can be sleep hallucinations, but could that be something to that? Could that be someone traveling astrally and you're still kind of in that dream wake state and you're actually seeing them? Like, I believe that could be so.
We've got Jay in Indiana now. Jay, you're on with Amy. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Amy. I'll be quick, George, because I know we're running out of time. I have a quick question for Amy, but I wanted to preface it with, George, you mentioned earlier about what is the thrill with the ghost hunting. I knew a couple that were amateur ghost hunters, and that reminded me of that, that they would come over and share these stories, and I would just shake my head. And finally I asked one, I couldn't help myself. I said, it sounds to me like it's like you guys are wandering around the woods looking for a hornet's nest. And when you find one, you poke it with a stick, hoping that hornets will come out. And when they do, you scream, see the St. Michael's prayer, and they run like hell. And they kind of chuckled and said, yeah. And I said, you know, y'all need to find a different hobby. My question for Amy, why are ghosts almost always associated with negativity? We're talking even a stereotypical old hospitals, asylums, prisons, mansions, or either places or else violent events, violent deaths, suicides. It seems like even our terminology tends to lean toward that. But, Amy, you haven't done that tonight, where if it's not a bad thing, it tends to be more labeled a spirit.
All right, and we got 30 seconds left, Amy. Is there a lot of negativity around ghosts?
No, I think I'm trying to get away from that. I think I'm trying to humanize them. So I think that is our natural inclination to think of them negatively. But I think if you get to the heart of it, like I said before, ghosts are people too.
They are indeed. Amy, keep in touch with us, especially your latest projects, okay?
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Name of the book is Life with the Afterlife, and also her websites are part of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. She's got them all linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. Stick with us all week, folks. We've got a great set of shows, and don't forget Ghost to Ghost Friday night here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morrills, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.